Hello and welcome to the Dex first episode of our brand new NFL related podcast covering all things on the other side of the pond with regards to the National Football League. Joining myself today, below me I've got Alfie.
You're right.
We've got Dev to my right.
Hey, yeah.
And adjacent to me we've got John, our resident American.
Hello.
Just quickly, apart from myself, Brandon, who's been on a few other podcasts, has any of us done anything sort of similar to this before?
No. I haven't for the deck, but yeah.
I'll be all right. We'll be covering. Cover everything from this match week just gone. And give us a little bit about ourselves and how did we all sort of come into following the NFL via we'll start with you, Alfie.
Yeah, so it was a couple years ago. I think it was one of my aunts or something went to Denver a couple years ago, and since then, I met all American sports wise. My family just supports teams from Denver and Colorado, so like the Nuggets, the Broncos, and so I support the Denver Broncos.
Indeed, to be fair, they've been doing well this year under Bo Nix and the coaching staff there. John, what about yourself?
I grew up in Kansas, so I was very, about 2.5 hours away from Kansas City, so it was pretty natural for me to just gravitate towards the Chiefs and everything Kansas City, Kansas related, besides KU. So that's how I just grew up. Even when the Chiefs were terrible, still supported them. They were my local team, even though I've moved around a bit. So,
yeah. Especially here in England, we'll always back supporting our local sides. Even though, especially for us over the pond, it's not so local for us. Dev, what about yourself?
I was actually trying to think about how it happened. I think I watched The Longest Yard with people like Burt Reynolds in it and Adam Sandler, obviously. And then started following the NFL from there. I already kind of supported the Knicks because New York was the first place I went to. So unfortunately for me, I picked the Jets, which, hasn't been the best decision of my life, but it also kind of has been. So I think maybe Adam Sandler supported the Jets in Big Daddy, but not 100% sure.
Well, I'm not sure about that one either. Yeah. So we've got a good mix. We've got the team currently on top of the NFL, one in rebuild, the Jets. and myself, I never really sort of got the idea about the NFL, but and then sort of like my friends sort of brought me into it, and especially over like lockdown and things like that. It was kind of like the only thing on. So, and talking to people like from America, things like that, going over to see like a couple of friends that I have over there, it kind of fell into it. I didn't really have a team to start with, but my friend's from Philadelphia or from just outside, and he's a massive Eagles fan. So go Birds.
Nice.
Sat and watched. It was the Super Bowl between the Eagles and the Chiefs from 2022. I was over there for that.
Oh, nice.
Wasn't at the game, but we watched it together. And Chiefs do as Chiefs do, fucking break my heart. Oh, but it was a nice experience to go over there and watch it with them. So it kind of gives us a bit about ourselves and how we all sort of got into the sport.
It feels weird to say that we break hearts, considering knowing our pain until 2018. So.
Yeah. But you know, we were there. We were going to win the Super Bowl, and we threw it away. Quite frankly, I thought we threw it away. But we'll touch on the Chiefs a touch later. I think the biggest game that we should start with, is the Ravens losing out to the Steelers. In what can only be described as a defensive Mike Tomlin masterclass in how not to score a touchdown but still win a game. Who wants to take on the Ravens game?
Yeah, I'll go first. I wrote an article on the deck about it. Yeah, I mean, Mike Tomlin's defense strikes again. You know, the Ravens so far this season, they have. I think they have the most passing yards per game. They have the most, the second most points per game behind the Detroit Lions, but you know, Mike Tomlin's defense, one of the best defenses in the league, led by T.J. Watt. You know, they turn up and they just stopped. They managed to stop Lamar Jackson, and you know, as they did earlier this season, they just kept kicking field goals and you know managed to win the game, and I think. Honestly, you know, they're probably an outsider, but if that defense keeps performing against, you know, these top teams, they really could go far, especially when we get into the playoffs, when the weather's bad, you know, when, you know, the run game, you know, maybe isn't as strong because of the weather, rain, etc., snow, you know, their defense, no one's going to want to face it. And so, it's a really good win and, you know, a statement win as well, showing their defense can, you know, beat the best.
Certainly indeed. And it was another off night for one of the NFL's prime kickers in Justin Tucker, who can't really seem to hit the broadside of a barn door at the minute. And it seems to me as a lot of kickers at the minute are struggling to score what you would assume is a basic field goal or just basic kicks in general. Anyone got any thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, I feel like funny you said that, because I was literally looking at whether Justin Tucker is kind of washed. I don't like that phrase, but
I don't like,
you know, the last three seasons he's hit under average for his career field goal percentage. So his field goal percentage is around 89% for his career. But last three seasons, 86, 86.5. And now this season, he's been pretty poor, hasn't he? 72. It's odd because he's obviously might be the best kicker ever. But, you know, I guess you want to back him and say maybe he can come out of it. But who knows?
I would say it's... Partly, I would say probably age catching up to Tucker, because he is in his mid-30s, I think, now. I remember when he first came into the league, he was incredible. And personal bias, but I do think we messed him up after he tried to mess with Travis Kelce's head in the AFC Championship game. But that's just me. There's a lot of young kickers nowadays that are hitting from incredible distances, like Harrison Butker. You know, that's kind of the new age of kickers. And now, I think it's been 2 or 3 years since Tucker hit that long one in Detroit that bounced in, that set the, like, NFL record. But, like, yeah, it's crazy to see. But I think the problem with kickers is partly weather-based, and I think also a lot of the special teams function is kind of neglected these days with it being a primarily offensive league. I mean, we see the problems with, like, the Bengals kicker, for example. We'll get to that, I'm sure. Like, he missed a couple of field goals indoors, and it's partly how the snap is handled and all that. And it's such a tricky, quick operation it has to be before it gets blocked. So,
Isn't it? I'm right in saying that the actual person holding the ball for Justin, they changed that at some point in the off season or at some point this season.
They might have gotten a new punter. I'd have to look that up, but it might have been last year. They might have gotten it. So it might
because I remember hearing something about them changing within that team. Yeah. And it might have resulted in something.
It might be also he changed his kicking routine. Could be a lot of things as well.
Like, I know Harrison Butker.
I know Harrison Butker changed his kicking routine, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems that whenever the Ravens get on a positive roll, it's one step forward, at least two back, because they seem to just shoot themselves in the foot constantly.
I felt like this
game was one that they should have won.
Yeah, they should have. That 2-point call at the end was horrendous. But I feel like this is a very typical Ravens-Steelers game where it's all defense. They punch each other in the mouth for 60 minutes, and whoever has the better overall offense can win it. And I think the fumble by Henry in the first drive set the tone, kind of. And besides a bad pick in the back of the end zone, which I thought might have actually won the Ravens the game, Russell Wilson played pretty good, and he's done a lot better this year. I'm kind of shocked, honestly. So.
That was good coaching.
Yeah.
For a new game plan, a different playbook to what he was using at Denver. It can make all the difference for someone. So
yeah, and we see how the Jets offense is doing under Hackett as well. So.
Yeah. Let's move on. Let's move on to the other big game. At the top of the AFC, at least the Bills and the Chiefs. The Chiefs finally getting knocked off their perch. To the league's delight, not much to John's, but
honestly, I'm not too upset. I'm not worried.
I'm also hearing this from a few Chiefs fans saying that then they're kind of happy that they lost this game, if that makes sense. So that they're not sort of getting complacent.
That and also we're getting a lot of key players back, and I think this is something that has been kind of glossed over. For the last few years, we haven't had a ton of injury worries for the Chiefs, but this year we lost Juju, who came back this week against the Bills. We lost, we had Charles Omenihu go out the AFC Championship game last year. Hollywood Brown on the first play of preseason, and he's coming back at Christmas, well, around the Texans game now. And all these players are starting to come back, and I think that's going to really help the offense and defense. And I also, there's also, I don't know if you've all seen it, but there's talk of there might have been some conservative calls by the Chiefs coaching staff to save things for the playoffs. And considering our history with how we've played big teams in these kind of late stage games, I'm not shocked, and I would not be shocked if Andy Reid is holding and Steve Spagnuolo are holding back some things for the playoffs.
Yeah, I'd say that's certainly a worry for the rest of the AFC, at least if the Chiefs are sort of being a little bit conservative going into towards the end of the season, especially not showing all of their cards, certainly makes them sort of again unpredictable going into the last couple. But I think there's only one man that we can really touch on for this game, and it's Josh Allen. Josh Allen put in a phenomenal performance, and has potentially been leading the MVP vote. In my opinion, I'd argue that's Lamar. In my personal opinion, I think it should be Josh, but who knows. Who knows?
I would say Lamar, just because of his stats and Allen has kind of turned the ball over a lot more lately.
True, but I would say that stats aren't necessarily everything. I think when you look at the when you give it the eye test, I'd say giving it the eye test and looking
historically at, also, Allen has always played us amazingly in the regular season. Like he turns on another switch when he plays us in the regular season.
Yeah.
The one play that will always stick in my head is his hurdle over, I think it was Legarius Sneed at Arrowhead a couple of years ago. And I think it's still on like some NFL commercials. But that he always just puts in a little extra effort in the regular season games against us. And so I'm not shocked he did it again. He's like 4-0 against us in the regular season, crazily enough.
Yeah. He can have the good regular season, but if it doesn't translate to the playoffs, then it's kind of all for naught. Mm-hmm. Anyone's got anything to say on the Bills Chiefs game at all?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking along the same lines as you guys. In terms of it probably is good for the Chiefs. You feel like looking back at the kind of Pats in 07, maybe they had too much pressure when they went undefeated and then lost to Giants. Maybe it might not be. I think as well, it feels like to me when you're watching the Chiefs, if it was another team or another quarterback, I would be more worried about them. But actually, we've seen them in the playoffs. We saw them last year. They've just got a track record where they turn up, and it does feel like they are saving things for the playoffs. Yeah. I agree.
It's something I said about Mike Tomlin in our chat, comparing them to sort of football coaches, like over here. The Chiefs very much strike me as a Champions League knockout Real Madrid. You never write them off over in a game ever. You don't ever write them off if they're at home, if they're away, whatever. Whether it's, Andy Reid's got something cooking in the playbook somewhere, you know, Carlo raises his eyebrow and suddenly the game switches, Chiefs are winning, and everything's just gone out the window.
Yeah. So, and again, like I said earlier, it feels weird considering our history, but I remember so many heartbreaking playoff losses that just killed me. And then now we have this team that almost feels inevitable, like a Thanos type team, which I'm not minding at all. But
you can keep not minding at all. Hopefully someone can knock you off the Super Bowl perch. Moving over to the battle of the NFC and the Philadelphia Eagles doing one over on the Commanders there to take control of the NFC East. Something I'm very happy with. I thought this was a game that could have gone either way. I could have very much seen Eagles at home aren't necessarily the strongest for some reason. I'm not sure whether that's just the pressure of the crowds, things like that. And the Commanders just tend to sort of they have found a way to, you know, get point. They almost beat the Steelers. They almost, you know, they've almost knocked off some really big teams. But at the same time, they're still young. They're still within the. We're still, you know, Jane Daniels' rookie year. Even though I thought he's been impressive all year, but we found a way to win, and his name is Saquon Barkley. Mm-hmm. And he was phenomenal, just phenomenal.
The fact he all got him on such a steal of a signing is absolutely, you know, you would think Derrick Henry would be kind of more of an Eagles type running back, but like he still fits the offense perfectly anyway. Saquon does.
I would say that either works. I'm kind of happy we got Saquon. I wouldn't say I'm happy to get Saquon over Derrick Henry, because Derrick Henry's been the best in the league this year.
Saquon's a very close second, though.
So. And again, Saquon's only... He's not actually far off some of Henry's stats this year, so...
And he's got less tread on his tires, so...
I think he's a bit... I'm not sure how much younger he is, but...
Well, in terms of, like, he's had some injury problems. He's not played nearly as much as Henry has, even with the league, so...
Yeah. But then again, we did get him off the Giants, so, like, it kind of... It would have...
Does it worry you slightly as an Eagles fan that you all didn't score a bunch until, I think it was the fourth quarter where you all just poured it on and made it also possible for them that to come was, back?
Yeah, that was going to be, like, another point that I had was I thought we started very, very slowly in this game, and we sort of worked our way into it.
To be fair, the Commanders' defense has been improving a lot.
The thing is, though, I don't think it was just this game. It's been the story of the season, though, starting. So I think for like the first 5-6 games, I think you only scored in the first quarter once, maybe, or you didn't score in the first quarter. So yeah, it's been the story of the season, not starting well. But I think it's it's a good win, of course. But yeah, as you guys mentioned, Saquon Barkley. I've been just watching him, just amazed, especially over in Denver, where our running back room is really not good. It's just amazing to see some of the things he did. Even the other week where he did that like hurdle spinning thing. It's amazing to watch.
We had the backwards hurdle, just making gaps and things like that, and. Some things like labeled at Saquon, like he doesn't score enough, but like at the same time, like Jalen Hurts is taking most of his touchdowns away, either going for like tush push on like the 1 yard line and sort of denying Saquon from there, or but even still, he's having a phenomenal season, as are we, especially from where we started 2-2 at week 4. And we've not dropped since. We now have to go to LA.
The Bengals game was a turn for y'all. I really believe that.
Everyone back in the Bengals. But I was again discussing this with my good friend, and it's like the Bengals aren't that strong defensively. Offensively, they're great. Mm-hmm. And Joe Burrow has been phenomenal this season. But defensively, they can be got at. And we did get at them. And the Chargers got at them. And everyone else seems to be getting at them.
Commanders, too.
Commanders got to them. Yeah. There's a possibility that the Bengals do not make the playoffs this year. And if you'd have said that at the start of the season, people would have laughed you out of the room.
Yeah.
Well, they're covering you 4-7, for the seventh seed, the Denver Broncos at 6-4, and the Colts as well, who are a win or two in front of them, 6-5, sorry, the Denver Broncos are, but a win or two in front of them, they're gonna have to find the wins, but that big matchup against the Denver Broncos, I think, might be their final attempt in making it, but I don't think they're going to make it.
Steelers game is their Super Bowl at this point, because they have the bye this week. They have the Steelers next week. They're going to be 4-8. Their conference record is abysmal, which is a huge tiebreaker at this point. And unless they can start, they have to win out practically. I think Burrow said after the Eagles game, they had to go 7 out of 9. And so they've got one more strike, I think, before it's over.
They're 4-7. So they're 4-7 now. They lose 2 more games. They're at that 9 mark.
Yeah. Which but is even still. Death sentence.
But even still, they have to play the Steelers.
Twice.
Yeah, they've got to play the Steelers twice, which. you know, they've left themselves a lot of work to do this late in the season.
Mm-hmm. I think it's nailed. They're not making it. I'm happy to rule them out at this point.
Yeah, they've stuck his neck out on the line. It's not going to be Bengals. No Bengals for the playoffs. One team, potentially also not making the playoffs this year, we could see the San Francisco 49ers potentially miss out this year. After their last minute loss to the Seahawks. That leaves them 5-5, level with practically everyone in their division, apart from Arizona, who are 6-4 at the top. Is there a world where both the Bengals and the 49ers don't make the playoffs?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you look at the schedule, the strength of schedule, you know, the Cardinals have the easiest schedule and they're, you know, 6-4. And, you know, the Rams have got Puka Nacua back, Cooper Kupp back, who were both injured earlier in the season. And so, yeah, you know, they're sipping up against the Seahawks, and so yeah, there might be you know, might not make it. I mean, Ayuk is out for the season, right?
Pretty sure Ayuk's out.
Yeah, Ayuk's out for the season.
Yes.
Debo Samuel, you know, he's not even lasted in full games at this point. He keeps getting taken out in the fourth quarter for several reasons, there's a good chance they don't make it. You know, hardest schedule in the division, but they do. I think there's six division games left, and so they're gonna need to, you know, turn up in the rest of them and not did what they did last week.
It's unfortunate because the Niners have just gotten battered this year with injuries. They, of course, they had Greenlaw go out in the Super Bowl in February. He's such a huge piece for that defense. I know he came back, but he's, you know, not fully up to speed, I think. They lost, I think it's Charvarius Ward. He's not playing that great this year. McCaffrey's just coming back from an injury. Like you said, Debo hasn't been great. He had that bout with pneumonia. It's crazy to me also. Weird connection I saw. The Seahawks it came out this week that Seahawks were planning to draft both DK Metcalf and Debo Samuel in the same draft. But it didn't happen, obviously. But, like, can you imagine?
That would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Looking at their remaining fixtures. They have to play the Cardinals. They have to play the Rams. So that's at least two games there. Divisional wise,
the Lions and the Bills.
They've got to play the Lions. They've got to play the Bills. They've got to play a resurgent Miami Dolphins and the Bears.
Yeah.
Next week is Green Bay at Lambeau.
I think that's going to be such a key game for the Niners, because if the Packers, I mean, the Bears, we'll get to in a bit, but the Packers look vulnerable this week in a lot of ways, more than I've seen them this year on defense.
Yeah.
If the Niners can't beat them, it's going to be a very tough road, I think, back for them. But let's give credit to the Seahawks, too. Like, that's a team I thought was going to be out after losing, what, four or five straight, and then they've come back and they've really showed some chutzpah, even if they don't have an offensive or a defensive line really to speak of. But, like, they still are fighting and making sure they are in the playoff. And I think they're the 8th seed if you look at playoff standings. So they've got some work to do, but they can do it. What, the Commanders have the 7th seed with 4 losses?
Yeah. So, I mean, the Seahawks have to play Arizona twice. They've got to play the Jets, the Packers, and the Vikings, and the Bears.
Hmm. speaking schedule, that is
it's certainly interesting, and I think it's certainly it'd be an interesting playoffs this year if we're missing teams like the Bengals, like the 49ers. It's going to certainly be interesting.
It's felt like this year has been a continuation of last year, which is it's a ton of parity. Like, you know, it's like with I don't know if y'all were around when the Patriots were really good. Like in those years, it always felt like the NFC had two good teams, AFC had two good teams, and usually the Ravens and Patriots or Steelers, and then no one else really could compete. But this last couple of years has been chock full of parity, and I love it.
Yeah, it's certainly a lot more open this year than as at least I've seen it. I think we'll move on to the major piece of off-field news that we had following the Jets 1-point loss to the Indianapolis Colts. They saw their general Joe Douglas lose his job. What are our thoughts on that? We'll start with you, Dev. What are your thoughts on Joe Douglas?
Well, I feel like he's had a mixed bag as a Jets GM. Obviously, the overall record is pretty horrendous. I think he took over in 2019. I looked it up. Only the Panthers have had a worse win-loss record since Joe Douglas took over. So the Panthers have won 27 games in that time. Since 2019, the Jets and Jags are next worst with 30. And then it's Giants, Bears and Commanders. So not a great list for him to be on. I think he came over as like someone with a reputation of picking out talent. And some of his picks, you can see, they work. Like Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson. But the big ones are obviously Zach Wilson. It's a big miss. He never managed to sort out the O-line, really. I can't say I'm surprised he's been fired, but in my heart of hearts, I kind of think it doesn't make a difference. It feels like an ownership issue at the Jets. And regardless of who's in charge, who's coaching, etc., I don't think it's going to really make much of a difference.
Yeah, it certainly feels like there is something wrong at the Jets, whether that is, you know, the orders coming from Aaron Rodgers that allegedly that he asked for XYZ to happen, and it's pretty much been done on the spot. Joe Douglas losing his job, whether or not there's just something wrong, but it seems to be every year there is something wrong, and nobody knows what it is.
Yeah,
no Jets. One within that organization knows what's wrong with the Jets at all.
I honestly, it's definitely Woody Johnson, but what can you do about that?
There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, and he's the owner, and like you see, like the Panthers have had David Tepper, who has had his own issues with meddling in team affairs as well. When he took over, after he's taken over from the Jerry Richardson, who was the owner of the Panthers before. And you see, like, Shad Khan with the Jaguars is also kind of meddling a little bit in team affairs as well. It feels like with bad teams like the Jets, it just feels like the organization just from top down just never solves itself. It always just goes through cycles. And ever since, I think, the second AFC Championship game appearance, they haven't been the same. And it feels like the Jets go for flash and splash more than solid picks consistently.
It's certainly sort of quality over quantity in terms of just get good now and try and make a push rather than sort of long-term gain.
And then the good teams also manage their cap space well. And I feel like the Jets have never really done that efficiently. And cap space is such a weird thing in the NFL because it always goes up. But anyway, yeah, it just feels like they overplayed a lot of people as well.
Mm-hmm.
The wrong people.
Probably have to overpay to get anyone to come.
Yeah.
How it's crazy to me how they had Brett Favre and now Aaron Rodgers. And this is probably Rodgers' last year. There's reporting out there by the, I think the Athletic was saying that it's probably Rodgers' last season as a Jet, which I'm sure Dev would probably say good riddance. But
I was never, I never really wanted them to be honest. But I was happy to give him a chance. It was still exciting, you know. I do have like an Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay Packers jersey and stuff, so mm-hmm. it's not like I completely dislike him. Although he is a very dislikable person, I think. But I think even with when you mentioned Favre, like he went to Minnesota afterwards, right? And then he was great there. And then even when you just look around now, like Sam Darnold, Geno Smith, like it's obviously something to do with the Jets. Like if you're getting drafted to the Jets as a quarterback, it's not going to work out. But yeah,
it's a weird one. It's certain teams like pick up, like for example, I think. We look at like Baker Mayfield, for example. When he got drafted in, he wasn't necessarily that. He had flashes, but he wasn't that great. He moved around for a bit, landed at Tampa, and has been quite good.
Mm-hmm.
I think with certain players, it's the environment that they grow up in and develop as a player. I think it's that foundational stage, especially when you've first been drafted, that kind of sets the tone for how that you potentially the rest of your NFL career goes. It's that initial step that you take. If you take off on the wrong foot, it can all come crashing down quite quickly. Take Zach Wilson, for example.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's an O-line issue for a long time with the Jets, to be fair. Which obviously no rookie quarterback ever succeeds behind a bad O-line or rarely succeeds. No, exactly.
Just looking
at Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Rare exception.
Yeah, well, he's might be the second best quarterback in the league. But I think I remember even like when Mark Sanchez was drafted and the Jets had like DeBrickashaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold, and even though like Mark Sanchez obviously wasn't that great a quarterback, but the Jets were still able to be reasonably successful. Obviously had Darrelle Revis and things like that. So, I mean, I guess it can happen, but it does feel like Joe Douglas in particular has missed on the O-line big time, and that's apart from the Aaron Rodgers thing, that's probably what has cost him his job.
Mm. Agreed. I think
it's just one of those things. It's trying to find the right balance, because if they go and invest heavily in the O-line but they lose out on like the receivers, like they go and lose Garrett Wilson or something like that, and then that starts to fall down, and it's like trying to find that balancing act of knowing when to pick up certain players for certain positions, and sort of just great team building in general. It's an incredibly hard thing to find out of good managers.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll move on to arguably the best current team in the NFL, the Detroit Lions, and arguably the worst in the Jacksonville Jags. Just
also the Raiders.
Well, yeah, the Raiders exist, but there's a lot of would it be fair to say that there is a big gulf between like the really bad teams and then the really good teams, because there doesn't seem to be any middle ground. That's you are either really good or really bad, and there's no sort of in between apart from like I don't know Denver probably.
Yeah,
I'd say Denver is probably like the only in between. Like, they're not quite good, but they're not quite that bad.
Just I would say that's the same there. With the Bears too. Like Bears, maybe the Bucks. Those are teams that have pieces that you can see. Oh, this is where they're going, but they're not quite there yet. It's just so noticeable when they come up against the Machines that are really, really good. Like the Lions and the Jags, like Lions are scoring for fun. Like they've been doing this all year. They've been scoring with the weirdest trick plays imaginable. Like what Ben Johnson is cooking up in that lab is something to behold. There's no way he's staying for another 2 years unless the Lions just somehow entice him with a ton of money. But yeah.
Honestly, who knows? But I'd say watching the Lions is just they're just fun to watch, and it looks like a fun environment to be in, alongside being like obviously a great team, like Dan Campbell, the coaching staff there, they just seem to make it really sort of a happy place to be.
To me, it feels like the old Stafford Megatron days when the Lions had those two. Like, the dome was packed and fans were engaged. Even if they were losing, it felt like the Lions fans were into it and they enjoyed their team. But now they have an actual squad. And Brad Holmes has been perfect at team building for that team. Now, the one negative in this game, Alex Anzalone is out for a significant time. I want to see what that does because he's their defensive captain. And he's the hard hitter in the middle of that defense. He was so good at New Orleans, and then he comes to Detroit and just keeps that going. And now he's out with, I think, a broken forearm for 6 to 8 weeks. So
injury list.
Yeah, that was the only negative out of that game for the Lions. Just losing him is such a massive blow after losing Aiden Hutchinson as well.
They lost Hutchinson to that broken leg, that really nasty broken leg.
I thought that was going to be the end of them, to be honest. Not that the end of them as like a good team, but just the end of them as a Super Bowl contender. I've been quite surprised that they've maintained such a high level still.
It shows how much depth that team has too, honestly.
Their offense is just unmatched. I mean, you know, their running back duo, Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, probably the best in the league. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, you know, with speed. You know, it's just they have one. Even the tight end, you know. Name deceives me, but escapes me. Sorry, but yeah, their offense, you know, they just keep scoring, and a bit similar to the Steelers in kind of, you know, the Steelers just keeping teams out. You know, if you can't stop the Lions scoring, then you're not gonna beat them. I think they scored over 50 twice now this season, and it's like, you know, they're blowing out teams left, right, and center. Yeah, and
That's the second time they've scored 52 points this season.
I guess it ties to the Jags, to be fair. But
yeah, it is. But you know, you're still scoring 50 plus. But I think the game. I know it's the Jags, but Jared Goff, after throwing what was it, 5 interceptions against the Texans, to throw four touchdowns and get a perfect passer rating. Bouncing back straight the week after, yes, the matchup was, you know, really good for him. It still says the statement about, you know, he can just get over it straight away.
How good is Bill Lyons going to be in a couple of weeks?
Yeah,
I think it's going to be an interesting watch.
Oh, fascinating!
It's certainly going to be interesting. They've got four what's it called, divisional games left, they've got to play Chicago twice, Green Bay once, and then they play Minnesota in week 18. In between, then, so next week they've got Indianapolis, they have Buffalo, as we mentioned, and then San Francisco as Monday Night Football in week 17.
We're going to know a lot about the Lions. And a lot of the argument has been, at least from what I have seen, they haven't played much of anybody besides the Vikings. And so it's gonna be interesting to see them play against teams that have better rosters, better coaches, etc. But I mean, they showed in that Vikings game a few weeks ago. They can do it. So
I mean, they can kind of do anything they want.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they are on form, they are very, very hard to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they're off form and Jared Goff's throwing the ball to the opposition for the entire game, they're still winning. And that's the sign of a good team, is just finding a way to win even when the chips are against you.
Mm-hmm.
I think got about 15.
They really suit the town, the city they're in as well. That's something that I think meshes quite well. Head coach, I would say Jared Goff doesn't strike me as a Detroit person, but maybe getting knocked back by getting traded and things might have put a bit, might have given him a bit more of an edge. I just think they really suit Detroit, and that's, I feel like, something that shouldn't be underestimated with that type of team building and that type of turnaround for a franchise.
Yeah. It's certainly that connection that they have between fans and team. It's arguably one of, if not the strongest things in any sport, is the connection that fans have to their side. We'll quickly fly through the rest of the games. We'll start with the Bears-Packers game. Bears kind of throwing that game away towards the end in another divisional loss to the Packers, making it, I think it's, what, 11 in a row now for Green Bay? Which is just... The one time that Caleb Williams and his offense managed to get it together and they looked decent, they just couldn't get over that final hurdle.
Play calling on that final Bears drive that got salted it away was not great. I mean, calling a bunch of deep pass plays, to be fair, I think they had those back-to-back sacks. But still, why are you throwing it when you can run with DeAndre Swift, who's been playing well? To me, that's my big takeaway from it. And of course, there's going to be the debate about why Eberflus pulled a timeout when he didn't need to. Packers pulled the Chiefs.
Indeed. What are our thoughts on the Packers? Because I didn't think they looked good in that game with Jordan Love, and I know Love's had his injury issues this year. It's just that sort of stop start nature of his season. He's not been allowed to get going through injury and whatever.
Their defense thrives off the turnover, in my opinion. Xavier McKinney, I think, is second in the league in interceptions. He had that streak where he was picking a game, had to pick a game for like six straight games, and he's kind of quieted off. And I think when the Packers do not get turnovers, it makes it a lot harder for the offense to work. And I think we saw that against the Lions. It feels like the connection from last year they had with those receivers and Jordan Love is kind of off this year. I don't know what y'all have seen, but that kind of feels like in the Lions game the other week, they kept dropping passes and stuff.
I just think, again, it's just that injury issue that he's had this entire year. He's not been allowed to build any momentum as a player, because we all know what Jordan Love can do. He's a fantastic player. But if
he might have been rushed back.
He might have been rushed back. I mean, and just looking at the table, we've just had some news that one of the Eagles' defensive players is going to be out for potentially the rest of this regular season, depending on how it goes, which sucks. But it happens. I think we just kind of got to move on and just sort of kind of just brush themselves down and go again. As to the Bears, really, as to everyone, like Patriots losing narrowly to the Rams. I think the Rams have looked very good, and they're going to have to next week against us in a game that I'm quite nervous about.
The defense needs to improve on consistency. They're up and down. Jarvis is the best rookie defensively this year, I think. He's been a revelation for them when they've been trying to find an Aaron Donald replacement. But if they can improve the defense consistency, like that offense, when it's going, it gets going. And it's against the Patriots. And the Patriots, their season's over. They're looking for a draft pick, but they have a quarterback. They have a quarterback, I think, finally. And I think that's the bright spot, I think, of this season for the Patriots.
Yeah. Anyone want to touch on the Titans versus the Vikings game, which I guess people have kind of forgotten about because, like, I haven't seen anyone, like, mention anything on this game at all anywhere.
As one who lives in the Nashville area, that's the only game I could watch.
Yeah, it was one of those where it was like, this game was on.
It was the inevitable result, really.
Yeah, Vikings win it. Vikings win again.
Yeah, don't want to bring up the Jets, but just a reminder, isn't it, Sam Darnold?
Yeah, Sam Darnold doing it again.
He's got better after that rough couple of games he had with the Rams against the Rams and the Lions. I think he's bounced back quite well.
Yeah. And then I think another blowout here is we had the Saints against the Browns, Saints winning 35-14.
That wasn't a blowout until like the fourth quarter. I think the Saints scored 21 straight to just absolutely eviscerate any doubt who's going to win that. It was 14-14, and all of a sudden, it was like 35-14 in a blink.
So. Yeah, it was one of those sort of blink and you'll miss it kind of games.
Who was better, Taysom Hill or Josh Allen?
I mean, if
we're talking. Talking about, you know, fun teams, fun players, man. Taysom Hill is just so fun. If it's, you know, in quarterback, you know, running back, tight end, wherever, he just does something, and it's, you know, it's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, certainly, yeah. Certainly fun.
Been that way since he came into the league from BYU.
Yeah.
Also, Coffee's Broncos just obliterated the Falcons.
Indeed. A Falcons team that looked okay towards the start of the season, they kind of dropped off a little bit now.
Mm-hmm.
But the Denver Broncos, I thought they started slow, but they've kind of got their act together a little bit.
Yeah, well, at the start of this, it was weird for us because at the start of the season, you know, people are just getting on Sean Payton's back because, you know, his play calling for Bo Nix. I think with some of the plays Bo Nix was getting told to do on like 3rd and 10, like I think we ran like a 3rd and 14 or something, which we could have passed. It weren't like we had to run it to waste clock or whatever. But then since then, I think it was around week 4. You know, we got more freedom, and we've just seen the best of Bo Nix. I think he's thrown one pick in the last 4 games, and he's just getting better and better. Obviously, you know, a lot of people talk about his age. You know, he's 24. He's not, but by the time his rookie deal finishes, he'll be 28, 29. You know, but it doesn't matter if he gets results now. Obviously, we're rebuilding. If he gets a good wide receiver in the draft, you know, next season, if our defense can keep playing as well as they can do, you know, anything could happen next year as long as we get a good receiver because and something in the backfield as well because you know at the moment, Bo Nix, you know, outside of Courtland Sutton, you know, he's throwing to you know Troy Franklin, Josh Reynolds, who's actually been out, you know they're okay, but they're not amazing. And you know, some games Courtland Sutton doesn't even get a reception, and he, you know, and our tight end room, you know, Adam Trautman, you know, isn't nowhere near the best in the league. Greg Dulcich is a complete bust, and yeah, even in running backs, Javonte Williams, you know, hasn't really been good. Audrey Estime had a good game, you know, in his rookie season, he's been all right. Joe McGotkin's been all right, but yeah, his offense isn't really that good, and he's still making things happen. And you know, the defense is backing that up, the top five defense in the league, and so yeah, I really think if we have a good draft, finally have a full set of picks, you know, we could make something happen next year.
Yeah, I'd say even with potential free agency options that you could pick up as well as the draft, I think you're potentially going into next season, you could be very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That division's just stacked with three elite coaches, isn't it, though? It's always going to be tough to pull away in that one. I actually think the Broncos will be quite good. I think they might be all right in the playoffs this year.
I think we'll still make the playoffs. Obviously, we got the Colts, who are I think we're currently the seventh seed, I think, and the Colts are the eighth, I think, and so that game against the Colts will be big. I think we got the Bengals, who you know we've talked about. I'll run into the season. There's some important games there, and I think we'll personally make the playoffs. But in the playoffs, I'm not sure, but. But yeah, I think it's definitely been much more positive than most Denver fans anticipated, next season is looking much more promising than it does for a certain Jets team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both teams in New York that aren't in New York because they play at MetLife, which is in New Jersey. Why can't one of you be called like New Jersey something instead?
Because naming rights.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Just make it easier.
When are we going to start the plea to get Malik Nabers to a good team like we have with other New York Giants players? Like,
look, just send him to Philadelphia. We'll be all right. We'll look after him.
Keep the trend going.
I think were they on bye this week? Did they play? I can't tell if
the Giants were on bye. Yes.
Not the Giants. I meant I was about to say the Dallas Cowboys, but no, obviously they played Monday night against the Texans, lost again to AT&T.
That was an ugly game.
Yeah. Almost as ugly as their ground, which is falling apart already.
Joe Mixon, though, I mean, you know, he's still, you know, plugging away, scoring touchdowns, you know, helping their backfield out, you know. But the Cowboys are just, it's actually crazy. At the start of this season, would you have thought that the Cowboys are picking in the top 10? Maybe even, you know, top 8, top 6. You know, it's mental to think that roster at the start of the season is going to be picking there.
Yeah,
it's a weird one. And they could end up potentially finishing bottom of the NFC East after all of this. you know, as bad as the Giants are, they could potentially leapfrog them. I think they play them in like 2 weeks' time.
We mentioned it in the group as well. I don't want to know how CD Lamb's feeling right now after signing that contract.
I mean, I'd feel great after the many millions that he's on.
The money's amazing, but he's not winning.
Yeah, so they play the Commanders next week and the Giants the week after. So they've got two massive divisional games.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I think that is 1 hour, so we'll wrap it up there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for our host for coming on and, you know, chatting about everything. Thank you. Thank you for listening, and see you all next week.